Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. High Velocity Radio is brought to you by PSI Digital Media Experts, the market leader in delivering digital media services. From manufacturing millions of CDs and DVDs to turnkey e-commerce solutions and streaming high-definition video over their worldwide content distribution network, PSI has the solutions to meet your needs. Find PSI at psidiscs.com, psidiscs.com. The High Velocity Radio Show is where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Produced and directed by Lee Cantor and brought to you live from Radio X Studio in Atlanta, Georgia. Now here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Stone Payton.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is Stone Payton, your host, and joining me in the studio this morning is our producer Lee Cantor and my co-host Todd Schnick. What's happening, Todd?
Not much, Stone. How are you doing?
I am doing well. Hey, I know I bailed on you last week, so it's been a while since we've gotten a chance to talk. What's happened in the last week or so?
Gosh, well, for me, the big thing is we've been recovering from a near-death bronchitis, but I'm doing great, actually.
So, yeah, you still look a little rough, but you sound a little better.
I sound a little better, yeah. I'm still going to have to pull away from the mic here and there and hack a bit, so bear with me.
That's all right. We'll cover for you. So get us caught up on the marathon stuff. What's happening with the running?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's going great. I was about to meet a very important deadline on New Year's Day, in fact, which was the first threshold that was meeting that making that three-mile run. But then then I got bronchitis, and so I've lost a little ground. But started back up this weekend and getting back in the hopper and feeling good. The next goal is that 6 mile.
All right. And what about the restaurant stuff? You know, Fuego Mundo is a big client of yours. What's going on there?
Oh, you know, actually, 2010 for Fuego is going to be an exciting year because we've passed the hurdle of whether we're going to make it or not because of the new restaurant, especially in this economy. You know, I think we've crossed that threshold. Now we're beginning to look at locations 2 and 3. So
really,
so that's going to be exciting. Plus, we're getting ready to experiment with a bunch of new different tactical options and try some different things. So it's going to be real exciting.
Well, I know that's got to feel good. To go through the first 6 months, that's got to feel great that you feel like you've made it over the hump. You know, we did that round table a few weeks ago. Aren't we going to do another round table, restaurant round table?
We are. We're doing another restaurant round table on February 1st. So, we've partnered with another PR lady. Her name is Jessica. What's her last name? Jessica.
I remember the Jessica Thomas show last time.
They all bragged about her the whole time. She and I have talked, and we're actually going to feature some new people this time. So that's going to be real exciting. So looking forward to that. That's going to be a regular offering on this show. We're probably going to do that at least once a quarter.
The restaurant roundtable.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because we're going to come behind that, and we're going to do video dust jacket style video interviews for top chefs all around Atlanta this coming year.
Absolutely. You know, it just dawned on me. We may have to have one of our today's guests maybe participate in one of those. I didn't even think of that. But,
oh, that's right. That's right. That'd be fun.
By the way, just speaking of marathon, you know, one of the things I'm doing with this marathon is I'm blogging about my adventure. Part of it, honestly, my main motivation is to hold myself, let the public hold me accountable to meet these deadlines because I am not good at getting off my fat butt and exercising. So I'm trying to make the world hold me accountable. But one of the other goals was a whole other means of building community and making new friends. And in fact, one of our guests today and I connected on Twitter because of this marathon running. So
because of the running.
Yep. So you just never know how you're going to meet people and what kind of impact they'll have on your life.
Well, I didn't get a chance to join you in last week's show, and I didn't book either of these guests. You booked them both. I think it's going to be a really interesting show. So tell us who you brought with you. Who's our first guest this morning?
Well, our first guest this morning is the Vice President of Training and Development for Hooters of America. So welcome to the show, Kat Cole.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So so tell us a little bit about what you do for Hooters of America.
Well, I have the opportunity to support any operational initiatives that go on with the company. We do business in about 27 countries. So at any given point in time, we are rolling out a new menu item, we have a new company initiative, or we're opening a new restaurant in a new country. And it takes lots of people out there in the restaurants and in the regions in different countries who are teaching people how to do the things that we need them to do. So whether it's Hooters University, which is the big giant workshop where our managers learn how to run our restaurants, or field training or other internal communication initiatives, my department supports those things. And I've been involved in training and development for a little over 10 years with the company and with the company for 14 and a half years.
Now, you've been with Hooters for about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Would you care to share with us what your first job was with Hooters?
Sure. I was too young to be a Hooters girl. I went in and applied to be a Hooters girl and wear those orange shorts in Jacksonville, Florida. I was in high school, and so since I was not of age to serve alcohol in the state, which is what you have to be able to do as a Hooters girl, they put me in a hostess uniform, and I was a host. So I stood at the front door, and I greeted people, and I made sure that the restrooms were clean and that people got a hello when they walked in and a goodbye when they walked out, and occasionally would have the opportunity to help the Hooters girls with different things. And as soon as I turned 18, I was able to become a Hooters girl. And it was exciting, and I wouldn't know it at the time, but it changed my life.
All right. So one of the questions I was going to ask you today was, does the corporation, do they encourage growing in the company as an employee? And obviously, if you've been with them for 15 years, they do. Tell us a little bit about how they, the kind of things they do to take employees and grow them in the organization.
Yeah, you know, it's something that you really don't see on billboards or advertisements per se, but the company's leadership is filled with people who started as cooks, Hooters girls, or managers.
Really?
Within the system. Yeah, actually, one of our other vice presidents of operations, her name's Bonnie, and she was is a divisional vice president of operations, but she was my first general manager. She hired me, and she had been a Hooters girl several years prior, and she's now a vice president running 60-plus restaurants in our southern division in the United States, and there are multiple examples of that all throughout the company. We have development programs. We have Hooters Girls of the Year, Kitchen Crews of the Year, Managers of the Year, Assistant Manager development programs, things that people wouldn't expect and that we're happy they don't expect. They just see the impossible, awesome environment of wings and beer and drinks and sports and girls and all that fun stuff. It's like an escape from reality. But in order to do that for many years, as we have, 26 years to be specific, you got to have some good systems. And it really helps to have people at the top who know what it's like to shake the wings, serve the wings, and run the restaurants.
Yeah. So I know that before the show, you talked a little bit about your international travel. And I guess it never occurred to me that Hooters would get beyond U.S. borders. Tell us a little bit about the international presence of Hooters and what you've done across the pond.
Yeah, we are in 26, 27 countries now. We just opened our latest country, South Africa, and it was our first restaurant on the continent. So that's really our final major inhabited continent to conquer. I'm not sure if we'll have a Hooters in Antarctica, but maybe. You never know. And so that was really exciting. I had the opportunity to go do that. But my first international trip ever was with Hooters. And Hooters called and asked if there was a key employee who could go and help open up the first Hooters restaurant in Australia. And I was 19 years old, and I had never been on a plane. And my GM at the time came to me and said, "Do you have a passport? Because they need to know so they can get you to Australia." And I said, "Can I answer them tomorrow?" Because of course I did not have a passport. I was just this girl in Jacksonville, Florida. I had never been out of the state. I had never been on a plane. I mean, my only modes of transportation had been a bus and my mom's car. You know, that was about it. And so I found out I could buy a plane ticket and fly down to Miami and stand in line and get a passport in the same day, which in a pre-9/11 world, you could do. And so I did that. So my first plane ride ever was my trip to Miami to get my passport. But then I flew back that next morning and called them and said, "The answer is yes, I have a passport." And they said, "Great, you're leaving in 36 hours for Sydney." And I was in Australia for a little over 30 days, and it was amazing. Also changed my life. I fell in love with culture and international experiences and understanding what it takes to start a concept overseas. And then I would have the opportunity to do that many times over in Argentina and Mexico and all over the world.
And do you find that you need to adapt your training methods and the way that you serve customers when you come to different countries?
For the most part, no. You know, our form of hospitality is so over the top. It really is that escape from reality. So even if it's not customary in that country, that's almost to our advantage because we can come in and make a huge impression in terms of the level of service. Tipping is not standard in many other cultures and countries, so the level of service is commensurate with the lack of tipping. And so when we come in and really take care of people and treat them like they're kings and queens, it makes a difference. There are some things we have to tweak or change because of culture and what's accepted, but for the most part, the fundamental training of teaching people to take care of all the guests and make it feel like an escape from reality remains the same.
And your training environment, I get the idea that it's very realistic. I think you were mentioning earlier that the training place, it looks like a restaurant, right?
Yeah, it really does. We have at Hooters University, we have a giant training center, and our vice president of operations, who runs all the restaurants in the corporate sector of the company, as well as our purchasing department, he's been really supportive of making sure we have as much of a replica of the restaurants in our training center as possible, because he wants to be sure that his managers are in a realistic environment. So we have a little mini bar, and we've got a Hooters bar that's there, and we make cocktails and drinks and teach managers really how to follow up on the bar. We have a mini Hooters restaurant where we do role plays and case studies and things of that nature. And it really helps the learning experience to be in a real environment without having to disadvantage the open restaurant with paying customers.
So if Todd gets hired today as a Hooters girl, which is probably unlikely, but there's a place for a
He'd
Todd
look great.
In the Hooters system, right?
Doing Absolutely.
Walk us through a little bit. How do you get him from day one to being a restaurant manager or a regional manager? What are some of the major steps?
If someone starts internally with the company, say they work as a kitchen employee or a Hooters girl, they have to be awesome at that role, you know, to begin with. And then they'll likely become a certified trainer, and someone who has been certified by people in my department will train them to be trainers, to teach other people how to do their job. And then they'll move up from there and take other key employee or leadership roles and eventually go through the management training program, which can range anywhere from 5 to 9 weeks, depending on if it's franchise, corporate, domestic, or international. And they'll move on up through our assistant manager development program. And I think he would rock.
Absolutely. You know, if you need any kind of sample or, you know, some experimental programs, I'm happy to volunteer and do what I can to serve.
Good man.
So, yes, yes. You know, I want to talk a little bit more about your recent trip to Africa. I suspect you were there to open a new restaurant. But you did some other things there, too. Would you share some of that excitement with us?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny how it worked out. We were opening our first restaurant in South Africa, and it's very expensive to get people over there. So we honestly didn't plan to send the barrage of executives that we typically do to openings. Our executive vice president of franchise operations was going to head over himself and represent the executive team. And that was going to be it, although we were all very excited. Initially, I wasn't going to go. And then I got an incredible opportunity to go to Rwanda to support the initiative to educate and elevate women by way of being involved in the first Miss Rwanda pageant since the genocide. And so I went to the CEO of Hooters and said, hey, I've been asked to go to Rwanda. Can I go? And then we started talking about the uncanny timing of it being paired up literally the same week with our restaurant opening. And he said, well, why don't we do this? Why don't we get you to the opening? You can go and support that event, go with our EVP of franchise ops, have some good meetings, support the restaurant, see how it goes, and then travel on up to Rwanda to do your work there. And their support did not stop there. Our vice president of marketing, a guy named Mike McNeil, been with the company for 19 years. He was sitting in the room and he said, well, why don't we do one better? Why don't we offer some form of a scholarship or a formal support for Miss Rwanda?
That's great.
Yeah, so Hooters provided the $10,000 scholarship for the winner of Miss Rwanda, and I was able to work with the contestants on site in Rwanda and then, of course, present the $10,000 scholarship to the winner, a woman named Grace Bahati, who won. And it was, you know, it was phenomenal.
Well, that's got to be huge. I mean, $10,000 in Rwanda's, that's a lot of money, right?
It's
a lot of money here.
Yeah, it is a lot of money here. And people joke, they're like, what are you doing in, you know, in Rwanda? There is not a Hooters in Rwanda, nor do I suspect there will be anytime soon. And so you're not going to get the big media splash, and it's not like it's driving guests into the restaurant. You know, that's a lot of money to just right. give out for something that may or may not positively affect sales at a time where every penny of profit counts. And so it really shows a commitment on behalf of the company to support women's leadership, women's development, all over the world and on the continent where we're doing business. I was shocked when they offered that and honored, really excited. And the way I got the opportunity is I have a dear friend who is an author. She's a novelist, and she was interviewing President Kagame of Rwanda, and he asked her to be the honorary Miss Rwanda and to help with this pageant. And when she learned everything involved, she suggested me because she knew my background in women's leadership organizations and my experience with Hooters Restaurants, which has run its own pageant for over 16 years. And so she extended the invitation to me, and I was able to go really because of her and because of the support of Hooters. And
well, getting the support to do that, I mean, that speaks volumes as to the core philosophy that must be present in your culture. How would you characterize the core philosophy of Hooters?
You know, it's led by our CEO, Kobe Brooks. He is the son of our CEO who passed away over 4 years ago. And he creates an environment where people aren't afraid to bring those opportunities forward. It's very inclusive. He's such a open and accessible kind of guy. He's just a very real person, speaks from the heart, is very connected to employees. And if something's important to someone on his leadership team, as long as it can be in line with our business objectives and support our image, our mission statement is one line: Hooters makes you happy.
And I like that. Now, see, that's something that an employee can remember and they can act on.
Absolutely. And if it's something where Hooters can really make someone happy or an entire country, he's all for it. And that energy and that spirit is pervasive throughout the organization. And he leads it. He sets the tone.
But it's not just the kind of cool things that Hooters is doing isn't just limited to women's development. Obviously, I know you do some things with breast cancer as well. But I remember, I told the audience, being the show, that one of our guests and I connected because of my silly little marathon adventure. But it was Kat and I, and so obviously the last several weeks, especially when I was bedridden with my near fatal bronchitis. I was following a lot of what she was doing. And one of the cool things that you did, I want you to talk about, I believe it was on New Year's Eve.
Yeah,
when you were, you and a bunch of your crew were sending off troops that were going overseas. Talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. We have an unbelievable relationship with military support organizations, specifically the USO and Operation Homefront. So USO, of course, supports troops overseas and at home. They have locations in airports, and anyone who's in military service can stop by the USO and get a warm meal, see a warm face, or just spend time with troops that are in transition, either being deployed or coming home for R&R. And in fact, our VP of marketing has led several trips over to Afghanistan, Uzbekistan, all the stands, as well as Iraq, bringing Hooters girls over to the military zones, which is really interesting. And they go over and bring so much joy to the troops over there.
Oh, I'll bet.
Yeah.
That's very well received.
Exactly. So they sign calendars and do cheers and just have a blast and bring a little bit of Americana, over to our troops, and actually just returned from Iraq from Thanksgiving. And because of that, there's a lot of energy between our organization and the U.S. military, and specifically in the Atlanta USO, which is one of the larger, since the airport is so big and so busy. We, whenever they have a need, if they have someone cancel on them, volunteers, people who are going to bring food, they always reach out to us. They know we're here to help them last minute outside of our planned support for them.
Right.
And the woman who runs it reached out and said, I have a cancellation. Can you please help? It's New Year's Eve. I was going to go a few days earlier. And she said, don't come a few days earlier. Let's change it. Can you come? But I need food. We need girls. We need everything. So I reached out to our local operators directly, and they pulled it together literally in about 48 hours. Wings, girls, sandwiches, you name it. Several of our vice presidents came down to help volunteer, and we served food. We greeted the troops. There was a huge plane coming over from Germany for one of their big R&R trips. And unfortunately, even though it was New Year's Eve, there were many, many troops being deployed to Iraq. There were a few giant planes that were headed out. So we hung out with them, and it's interesting because we have some employees, we bring Hooters girls, and they're so excited and they're so used to bringing smiles to people's faces. So they get there and they're hanging out in the USO and they're expecting everyone to go, woohoo, the Hooters girls are here, but these guys are headed to Iraq, and some of them don't want to talk and they don't want to smile, but they appreciate it nonetheless. And it takes the people that we bring to volunteer at the USO a few minutes to really understand that and to learn to respect the way they want to interact. But what you find is the closer it gets to that plane leaving, it's almost like they latch on. They start opening up. They start laughing, telling stories. They ask questions. They want to hug you a ton of times. They miraculously come to the food line three or four times when you know they don't need any more food. You know, it's that connection with the people who are there to serve them. And it's interesting to hear them say, this one guy, and I tweeted this, and we were talking about it over Facebook, one of the Marines, right before he left, he had been very quiet the entire time. And he came up and he hugged the girls. We took pictures and they're posted on, I've got them on Twitter and Facebook and on my blog. And he came up and said, I want you to know that you guys make it, you know, this is what we're fighting for. And this is really the reason that we do what we do. And you feel so minuscule when someone says that. I'm thinking, I'm bringing girls in wings. You're out there putting your life on the line. I mean, there's no comparison. But the reality is they do feel that things like that, people who support them and serve them, really do justify and validate the sacrifices that they're making, in addition to the joys they have of their family and friends and things back home. And it's that makes it worth it. You know, people say, oh, you're spending New Year's Eve at the airport. That sounds like a blast. It is. And I would encourage.
Nothing more rewarding than spending time with those guys.
I would encourage anyone who has the time and the ability to reach out to the USO and try to coordinate a group to send food down there and get a couple friends or family together. And you can bring children. They can't be in the kitchen, but children can go and at least meet the troops. And you can bring them down and volunteer. And they need help. They need food and support. We put together goodie bags. You should see all the cookies that people have baked to bring up there. It really is a wonderful way to give back.
And how cool is that when she goes back to her organization and says, look, we've got this opportunity. We had this one thing scheduled, but now I need to do something different, a little bigger for New Year's Eve. And they just all came together for you. Because I could see that would be a real headache in a lot of organizations, I would think.
Oh, if the culture doesn't allow you to take initiative that way, absolutely. I mean, and Kat, what you said earlier is that a lot of the impression that most people have of Hooters is beer, wings, and girls and all that. And what's so eye-opening about this conversation is just all the other cool stuff that the organization is doing. And as you said with your CEO, I mean, he's setting it up so that.
Well, that's where the tone is set. Yeah. I mean, the executive suite can set the tone in that direction or not and make all the difference in the world, can't they?
Absolutely.
So tell us about the breast cancer effort. What are you doing on that front?
You know, I would encourage people who do hear this to go to Hooters.com and check out old past news, archived news. We are one of the largest fundraisers for cancer research and breast cancer research in the restaurant industry. And we had an employee named Kelly Jo Dowd, and she was one of our early, early employees. She was on the cover of the Hooters calendar in the early 90s. She was one of the first Hooters girls to run her own restaurant. She was one of the first Hooters girls to become a Hooters GM and was really a staple of our company for quite some time. And unfortunately, she found out she had breast cancer. And it was quite progressed at the time she found out, and she got a lot of treatment and went into remission, and then it came back really big and strong, and it was stage 4. And unfortunately for us, the short version of the story is we have given so much money to breast cancer research privately, quietly, anonymously, because prior to Kelly Jo, we had to be careful of being perceived as opportunistic because of our name. And people would say, oh, they're just giving to breast cancer because the name of Hooters. And honestly, some very large organizations that would surprise you would not take money from us for breast cancer support. And for those who are affected by this disease, that's almost unthinkable that you wouldn't, you know, take money from someone who's trying to give it. But we understood sometimes our concept does have some barriers to being accepted. But when Kelly Jo's story emerged and she launched her public fight against breast cancer, she gave us a face. She gave us a legitimate way to say, okay, look, at this point, we're not being opportunistic. We have someone who's in our Hooters family who has been negatively affected. She has been diagnosed with terminal breast cancer, and it became metastatic and had moved all throughout her body. And we worked together to launch an information campaign. So before Kelly Jo died, she did lose her battle with breast cancer, but she did a lot before she passed away. We filmed an information video that all Hooters employees see. That is her talking into the camera saying, here's how to take care of it. Don't make the mistake that I did. I love my Hooters family. We supported her family during her efforts to fight breast cancer. She was a mother of a young golf prodigy named Dakota Dowd. And we created a multi-million-dollar grant in their name that we gave to the Jimmy V Foundation for Cancer Research. And we have a very strong partnership with him through the Valvano Jimmy V Foundation. And we have raised millions. We give away big checks at our International Swimsuit Contest. Our Hooters girls take donations and raise money every year during Breast Cancer Awareness Month and all throughout the year. And it is a huge sense of pride for our Hooters girls and our organization as a whole. And for me personally, as a female and as an executive with the company, I am very proud of what we've done.
Well, you certainly should be. This has been an incredibly eye-opening conversation for me, you know, because like so many, I think, you say Hooters to me, and I think beer, wings, and girls, and just, you know, sort of chuckle, and wow, that's incredible.
Before you go, Kat, I want to be sure that you tell people the address to your blog, because I think it's worth the time for people to go back and follow and your story on this Rwanda adventure.
Oh.
Because it was that was right after you and I first connected, so yeah. I was interested in getting to know you a little bit, and you were just blogging and journaling about that adventure, and so there's a lot of good stuff today. I mean, this is
Let's do that. We do need to wrap up in a few minutes. I've got a couple of other questions that I'd like to ask you before we visit our next guest, but let's make sure that we get the address for your blog and also the address for people to be able to check in with what you guys are doing and learn more about your efforts with the military and government affairs and breast cancer and those kinds of things.
Yeah. First, the blog is katcole.com, KATCOLE.com.
Can't believe the domain wasn't taken.
No,
so that's my personal blog, but I do forward updates, things going on with Hooters. And then my Twitter address is at KatColeATL, so KATCOLEATL. Our Hooters Twitter handle is at Hooters_rest, REST. So, and that's where all the updates will be posted. So we will post, we'll tweet out big initiatives that will link back to the website. And of course, Hooters.com and Hooters on Facebook. So we're all into the social media gig to make sure everything's communicated wherever people are listening.
Well, you really are. And that's one of the final questions I wanted to ask you about, because my buddy Todd, to the degree that we have a social media presence at High Velocity, it's because of Todd.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fascinated. You guys have really done a marvelous job with your social media presence. Can you speak to that a little bit and what that effort's been like for you?
Sure. It's it started out really in a very organic fashion, as I think it does for a lot of companies. You kind of stumble upon it because one or two people in the organization think it's cool. And they're either young enough to think it's cool or they're involved enough in technology to know that it's important. And so the combination of those things gets a little buzz going. And if you have a good culture in the organization, people latch on and go, wow, okay, it's a little risky. You know, it's vulnerable. You're being accessible. You're putting yourself out there. But there are a lot of people out there listening that you couldn't access otherwise. And so the company, although there's much more we can learn and do, and we really are putting a lot of effort into learning more about how to do this thing right, you know, how to be engaged in an authentic way in different social media sites and social media platforms and make sure that we're serving our brand, our customers, and our employees really well. But it's been fun, you know, getting started off in the kind of cheesy way, old school MySpace. You know, we got started there with some recruiting platforms, and that worked very well for us, and then moved into Facebook. And Twitter's been a slow crawl. You know, you have some of us who represent the organization, but it's our personal Twitter, you know, pages. And so by way of doing that, now we've got our Hooters Twitter page. Some of our franchisees have Twitter accounts. And so we tweet together, and I randomly interact with our customers and send them to our restaurants. And so does our amazing PR leader, Alexis. You know, she's always on Twitter and interacting with people. And it's been a great lesson, but it's been, I can't say enough about the power of social media and the ability to connect. And like Todd said, you know, you never know who you're going to meet. And
right.
I've been so inspired by his story of getting into running, and I really need to get back into it. So he's been an inspiration for me. And I have met amazing people in Atlanta through Twitter. And it seems so weird to say that. Where'd you meet? Twitter. You almost feel like you're saying match.com. Right. You
know? It has that feeling, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But as long as you're, I think what we've learned as an organization and what I've learned is that it still doesn't replace in-person relationships, and it's just a facilitation for that. And as long as those things materialize into more meaningful relationships, whether it's cool things like this that, you know, Todd has allowed me to be a part of, or meeting someone up for coffee in a city when you're there, I mean, that's really the point of all that stuff.
Well, and in what other world could Todd be an inspiration?
Well, there's no other place that I could be inspired.
It's amazing what technology is enabling these days, right? Well, before we let you go, Kat, we have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show. We like to ask each guest, if they would, to share a mistake that they've made at some point in their career, and really, more importantly, what they feel like they learned from it. Could we get you to do that for us?
Sure. Well, I've made many, so I know we only have time for one, but I was given the opportunity to move up in business at a very young age, which is great, but it means you make a lot of mistakes. And if you're smart, you learn very quickly, and hopefully I have been. One of the bigger mistakes I made moving up is that I tried, because I was so young in the organization, there were many times where I knew something maybe wasn't quite right, or I had an opinion that it wasn't the best that it could be for the organization. But because I wanted to please the people who had put me in a particular role, I would just go along with whatever it was that they were suggesting, even if I disagreed. And I would find out the hard way on multiple occasions that is not the way to lead an organization, or to lead yourself, quite frankly, in any business. And I made some mistakes where things went down a pretty bad path, whether it was a waste of money or the initiative truly wasn't the best for the organization. And if I had spoken up, I don't know how much of a difference I could have made at such a young age, but maybe I would have. And there have been a few instances where I told myself, I'll never do that again. I'll never sit on my hands. I won't have the thought and not share it, because I'm being paid to share my perspective. And you really have to learn that as you start to lead other people. And that, I think, some of the bigger mistakes I made were being quiet when I shouldn't be, or going along with something just to be agreeable, instead of presenting an argument, quite frankly, in a candid environment and being seen as someone who challenges the status quo. I do now. But that was a lesson I wish I would have learned a little earlier. I think it could have made a bigger impact in my organization had I learned that sooner.
Well, I think that is tremendous advice. And, you know, the author we had on a couple of weeks ago, John Miller, makes a big deal in encouraging organizations to set a tone where the what is more important than the who. It doesn't matter where the idea is coming from, but that the idea, you know, may very well have some merit. I suspect in your organization, they would have probably really embraced even, you know, the 19-year-old girl. If it's a good idea, it's a good idea, right?
Yeah, we hope so. We hope so. But I did learn the lesson, and I think it's an important one for people to know.
Well, two more quick things. We've had a couple gentlemen on Twitter ask if Stone and I got wings.
And get a Hooters magazine.
Well, I was just going to say, we got which was a brilliant idea to bring Hooters magazines into a studio with four other fellows.
It's kind of hard to concentrate on the questions we want to ask,
right, but I do have one last personal question. Well, what Hooters were you working in Jacksonville?
I was a Hooters girl first at the Hooters in San Jose, Florida. It was the third Hooters ever built, and it's on San Jose Boulevard in Jacksonville, Florida, on Goodby's Creek. So if anyone's in Jacksonville, Florida, they'll know where that is.
Okay. Well, I hung out at the one at the Landing.
Oh, I worked there too.
Yes.
Just not first.
And in fact, my first job out of school was with Congressman Stearns, and I slapped one of his bumper stickers on the hood above your grill. So.
Very nice.
So, just so you know.
Thanks for the contribution.
Absolutely.
I didn't know where he was going when he said slapped. I thought, all right, you know, we have. Hopefully he's got the little button ready.
Exactly.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. I hope you'll come back. And I'm not just saying that like the guy, you know, says, y'all come see us sometime.
Right.
I hope you'll come back for the restaurant roundtable,
absolutely,
special edition of that. But the other roundtable that we're going to start doing here is for nonprofits that are working,
awesome,
you know, to raise money for organizations that are truly making a difference. And I would love to have you participate in one of those roundtables. So.
I would love to. I would really love to. I'm the chair of the board of the Georgia Restaurant Association, and the Restaurant Association represents restaurants, and they do things like that, fundraisers for nonprofits, and really rally together for causes locally and nationally.
Yeah.
So I'd love to get them involved as well.
Terrific. Well, we'll just make that happen.
Well, as you know, High Velocity makes you happy.
That's right. That's our motto, right?
Absolutely.
Hooters makes you happy.
Well, listen, can you hang out with us for a little while we visit with our next guest?
I would love to. I'm fascinated to hear his story.
Well, I am too. I feel a little bit sorry for him because I got to be candid with you. I would not want to follow you on the show.
he got a little unlucky there. Well, why don't we, the next guest on our show is the owner of Atlanta Insurance Live. Welcome, Chris Jordan.
I'm fired up to be here.
Absolutely. Well, again, a thousand apologies for having a follow cat cold, but we're really excited to have you.
Yeah, I'm going to have a hard time following up on that.
Yeah, we'll do our best to make this.
We'll post it separately on the website.
You didn't bring any Hooters magazines, though.
I didn't bring any magazines.
No. But actually, we want to talk about another magazine that you're in a little bit. But first of all, tell us a little bit about what you do and a little bit about your story.
Well, I started Atlanta Insurance Live, actually came to be what it is now, back in April of last year. And in March last year, I quit my corporate insurance sales job because I was dissatisfied and, you know, overall wasn't happy. And at the time, my wife was 5 months pregnant, and we wanted to avoid daycare. So I said, well, you know, this will kill a couple birds with one stone. I'll stay home with her, avoid that daycare, and also scratch my entrepreneurial itch and try to start something on my own. So it's been a pretty interesting process. I started out in March with a website called chrisismyagent.com, and a lot of people thought I was in real estate. And I spent many days looking at a blinking cursor, and one day it just kind of dawned on me. I saw my webcam, and I said, well, let's fire that thing up. And I did a YouTube video, and it's, you know, not very good, but I said, hey, this is cool.
So you are the classic case of an entrepreneur, someone who was stuck in corporate hell and decided to do something different and take control, and you've done it. And you've been at it now for quite some time. How's it going? I mean, I follow you on Twitter, and you and I have become friends over the last several months, and it's been a lot of fun to watch you. But how is it actually going for you? How's it working?
You know, it's been, at first it was very slow, like any new business. Most of my customers didn't actually come to me until probably mid-October through the end of the year. So I guess the process of, you know, being in business 9 months brand new and having sales start coming in at the rate that they started to was kind of exciting. But then more so using social media and getting, I guess, some of the attention I've gotten from certain individuals within my own industry has been pretty exciting. And I think that, you know, to follow up on what Kat was talking about with regards to social media, I think that your reach and the speed that all that can happen can be tremendous. So,
well, and just so the audience knows, and we're going to be sure to give you an opportunity to talk about how people can find you. But these videos that you're doing isn't you sitting at a desk talking about insurance policies. Just to cite a couple of examples that I've seen recently, there's a video of Chris doing snow angels. There's a rather disturbing video of him in the shower talking about insurance policies. A really clever video last week of talking about insuring your things like your smartphones and cameras but he actually was filming. He filmed a video, recorded it, and played it on his iPhone, and then did a video recording the video on the iPhone. It's really clever. I'm sure I'm butchering the description of it, but it's not unique video. Why are you doing it that way?
Because it's insurance, and it's, you know, how boring of an industry. You know, I'm coming from an industry that's still, I think overall, thinks that they're in the 1960s, maybe the 1980s at your most advanced levels. So to use the internet, you know, When I talked about the blinking cursor, I couldn't just do a written blog because who's going to sit there and read 500 words about their auto insurance policy? And then at the same time, who's going to sit there and watch some guy talk about auto insurance policies without trying to spice that up some? And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say that I don't have videos where I'm just kind of standing there in front of a blank wall, because I do, because coming up with ideas to make insurance exciting can be a little daunting sometimes. But
I mean, you even did a video where you were demonstrating a car accident, and you used like Matchbox cars, and did this. I mean, it's some fun
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I had Lego men and Matchbox cars, and you know, it's fun because I can kind of get to be a kid again. But I think that eventually, you know, reaching my customers, referral partners, trying to establish and grow my brand, it makes it a lot more fun than putting on a suit and tie and paying way too much money for a billboard.
Now, here's the big question. Is it having an impact on people finding you on the internet?
It is. The constant update of the blog has helped a lot with SEO. I can't even describe how much I've learned in the last 10 months now in doing this about internet marketing, blogging, video blogging, SEO, and social media. So it's really helped me, you know, become found. I'm, you know, as far as targeting certain keywords on Google, I'm getting found that way. And then some of the exposure that I've gotten on some of these other sources. So
You're an independent agent, or you're working for a single entity?
I am an independent agent, and the reason I made that switch was before I actually made the transition back in March, I was working for what's called a direct writer. Typically, if you think of an Allstate or a State Farm, that's all those guys sell. That's not the company I came from. But you're really held in a competitive industry like insurance when it, you know, let's be honest, it does oftentimes come down to the rate. You got to have access to multiple resources. So I made that decision to go independent to really represent my customer more so than my insurance company, to give my end customer more options. So
tell me about the shift working from home now. I've worked from home since 1987, so I don't remember what it's like to go into an office. It's a little bit fresher in your mind. Give us a little bit of a feel for what that transition's been like for you.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind, absolutely. And now, you know, as I mentioned, part of the reason for me doing this was to stay home with my daughter. So my wife leaves the house at 7 a.m. and she's gone till 4, and I've got my 6-month-old the entire time, and she's normally sitting bouncing on my knee or sitting in her seat, you know, playing on the floor.
Or a prop in one of your videos.
Or a prop in one of my videos. I put her to work sometimes. We did a video maybe 2 months ago where I had my daughter and one of our dogs, and my pitch was, well, I've got a baby and a puppy, so it's totally fine to talk to me because I'm not your typical life insurance guy. So,
but I got to think.
I trust you.
I think that's a big part of it, though. I have another client that I'm trying to get on video because I think that's just a great way to establish rapport and develop trust. In addition to the obvious, which is demonstrating expertise. I don't want to go any further without saying that, you know, I've listed a bunch of different funny things you've done in these videos, but it's very substantive material too. I mean, I've actually done some things with insuring my equipment because of that video you did just the past week. So I don't want to say that the videos are just comical. I mean, there's very substantive information there.
Yeah, I try to provide. I try to be as informative as possible and provide as much real and relevant information as I can. It's not just, you know, trying to put on a dog and pony show. I really want to be able to provide anybody out there who's looking for insurance information or advice the opportunity to find pretty much whatever they're looking for through that updated content. I think as this thing just continues to go, I'll have more and more content and hopefully, you know, sell some policies. But at the same time, like I said, I think that, you know, somebody needs to be out there actually educating consumers online, because if you don't know a thing about insurance and you go to Google, you're going to get hit with 50 million search results. And I can't imagine how overwhelming that would be for somebody. So,
well, you know, I just got my renewal policy from my auto insurance, and it's a 15-page document. And I'll be honest with you, I didn't look at one darn number on there. I just assumed everything's fine and moved on. You know, but one of your videos recently, you were going through the auto insurance policy, and you were highlighting little things to look for and things to double check. I mean, so there is real substantive information there. But at the same time, you add an element of entertainment to it and makes it interesting. And your videos aren't 25-minute dissertations. They're short 90-second videos. You know, so you get a lot of valuable pop in a short amount of time. It wouldn't be an episode of High Velocity Radio where we don't feature and talk about Gary Vaynerchuk. But I kind of look at Chris is to insurance what Gary V is to wine. I mean, and you and I've talked about it. He is kind of an inspiration in terms of what you're trying to build here.
Yeah, I've followed Gary for a long time, and you know, I'll openly admit that I've somewhat just decided to take his entire what he's done and try to apply it to the insurance world. To be put, you know, in the same sentence with him is, you know, it's an honor, because yeah, I mean, I think he really is a big inspiration for anybody out there who wants to go out and do something for themselves and leverage technology. And the way that the technology is today, mm-hmm. the costs, I mean, I'm a guy working from home and I don't have a marketing budget. So to be able to look up to somebody like that, get advice, get information, and kind of, you know, see what they've done and the results that they've had from it, you know, I think it's kind of, well, why not try this, you know? So
what's next for Atlanta Insurance Live? Where is this going now?
Well, I, you know, like I said, I've gotten a lot of exposure within the industry itself. So one thing I want to eventually maybe try to do before the end of this year's up is hopefully try to inject some forward thinking into my industry and get some of these guys off of billboards and get, you know, get this thing moving in a 2010 direction. You know, as far as Atlanta Insurance Live, I'm going to keep on doing the videos. I think this year I'm going to try to start maybe tackling some commercial subjects, get into some business insurance, maybe try to have some people come on to talk about maybe certain aspects of insurance that I don't do, like possibly the health insurance field, mm-hmm. disability, some things that I don't do that maybe they could leverage whatever exposure I can get them and try to.
Well, I think your ability to get out there and do what you're doing and make it put out a little unique spin on the insurance industry is beginning to pay off for you. You were just recently featured in Inc. magazine, is that correct?
Yeah, I'm on Inc.com.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Right now, that was just to, again, some of the fanfare that is social media. I think that opportunity came to me just through use of Twitter, me tweeting to them constantly.
Good
you know,
for you.
Not really badgering, but you know, trying to figure out what's a clever way I can get at them. And one day it worked. And so if you go to Inc.com, there's a feature on their homepage called 9 Businesses You Can Start in Your Pajamas, I think is what it's called. And it's a cool slideshow of 8 other businesses and myself that are featured there. And you know, again, my daughter's a sales tool because she's there in the image with me. But it's a, you know, I emailed the editor there and just couldn't thank him enough for the opportunity that is, because for a super, super, super small business like mine, that's just a wonderful opportunity to.
Oh, I'll bet.
Absolutely.
Well, it's been a big discussion on Twitter. I mean, a lot of people that are in our shared community have been talking a lot about that. So,
yeah.
And I would never shy away from using your daughter as a prop, just so you know.
Well, keep Todd, it up. You know, you're a social media consultant of some sort. I mean, does he need to curse more? Because, I mean, Gary Vee, he talks like a drunk sailor, right?
Yep, absolutely. So
so you probably got to step up the cursing. You need to write a book. Like, you do auto insurance, so it could be
crash
bump it.
Well, yeah. Crash it instead of crush
oh,
it.
Oh, I like that. That's outstanding.
That's great.
See, you just never know what's going to happen.
I've got an idea for a video now.
Oh, I love that. That's great. I believe you also got some speaking engagements coming up. So to tell us about some about those.
Yeah, I'm traveling to Tampa next month to give a presentation to the Agents Council for Technology, which is, I guess, a subsidiary of the Independent Insurance Agents and Brokers Association of America, to talk about use of video and, I you know, really overall internet marketing. And because it is the Association for the Independents, I like the idea of it because I'd like to really provide as much information as I can to the other little guys out there, because the independent agents are out here competing against Allstate, State Farm, these huge companies with these monster marketing budgets. My wife and I received 3 exact envelopes the other day from State Farm, and you know, first of all, I think that that marketing is a little bit silly in 2010, but at the same time, it's an indicator to me of, well, this is what I'm up against. This is some aggressive marketing. Right. So, you know, that's going to be a great opportunity to try to share some information with other agents and you know, hopefully some of the carriers. And like I said, I'd really like to inject some forward thinking into this thing. So
you're encouraging other agents, other independent agents, to do the same thing you're doing.
Yeah, I would highly. I mean, I think that if you're an independent agent or even a captive agent, which is, you know, you're working for one direct carrier, I think you're at this point silly not to be attempting to get on social media, start a blog, even if it is a written blog. It doesn't have to be video. Come up with a way to brand yourself and instill a little bit of creativity in what you do, and, you know, open yourself up to your customers. Everybody in the insurance field for far too long, I think, has been the suit and tie, upright, rigid, and I think that there's a rift between the general population and the industry, and I think that if agents would just open themselves up, I think they'd find success in doing that.
You just wrote the dust jacket copy for your new book called Crash It.
Crash It. I like it.
That is marvelous. That's $1 million idea right there.
Absolutely. Hey, let's shift topics for a second. You doing insurance isn't all that you do as an entrepreneur. You also have a business where you do some WordPress design. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I started, like I said, in working with WordPress and doing using the tools available to everybody online. I've gotten quite familiar with using WordPress and lately started a very, very small business called Landmark Business Solutions, just to do some freelance design work for very small businesses and maybe take some of the knowledge that I have and help them move their marketing budget out of some of the print areas that aren't doing anything for them and just try to help them get more of an online focus and build their presence that way. Because I think in, my gosh, 20... you know, well, I won't say 20, I'll say 5 years, 5 to 10 years, if you don't have a strong foothold on the internet, no matter what you do, whether you're a dry cleaner or an insurance guy or Hooters, you need to be making the moves now to go that direction.
Yeah.
Well, we're all active in that space, and it feels like a lot of people are on it, but there's still a lot of people that aren't taking advantage of that tool yet. I mean, it's amazing to me.
Yeah, it is, and I think it's because of people, a lot of people out there maybe still thinking about this like MySpace. I think it was like 2006 where it was the big MySpace boom, and it was all, everybody's in their office wasting time on MySpace. And
I think there's pictures of people doing, you know, keg stands,
things
like that.
17 second keg stands that, you know, but these days it's a different space, and you know, it's a serious space. When you've got the number, when you look at the number of users on Facebook and searching the internet, period, you know, do some research on certain keywords, and it's just amazing how many people are going to Google and Bing and Yahoo and searching for, you know, fill in the blank.
Yeah.
How many users on Facebook now? Is it 350 million?
Yeah, it's almost 400 million. It's the third largest country in the world when compared.
What I like about all of this technology, and I'm absolutely a neophyte and typically defer almost everything we even think about doing over to Todd, but what I like about it is the idea that it's working for you while you sleep, or it's working for you while you're at the radio station hanging out with us.
Yeah, and Stone, you hit the nail on the head with that one. When the idea hit me, why not use the internet? Part of my challenge in having a 6-month-old was going to be not having the ability to go out to Chamber of Commerce meetings, business association meetings, doing insurance sales the typical way. So I said, well, let me put some of this traditional stuff on the back burner for now, get a foothold online, because I felt that it could possibly duplicate my efforts. And when I got back to actually getting on the phone and doing the dreaded cold calling and all that stuff, it's kind of like, well, there's two of me out here now. So
if you're here and your wife's at work, where is the daughter in the car? Where is she right now?
Well, my daughter is, or my, not my daughter, my wife is home from school today. She's a teacher. So
oh, nice.
So she
well,
is,
that worked out well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forget that it is MLK Day.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so right. she's home with Elise right now.
Outstanding.
Only the most dedicated of us are working today.
Yes.
On MLK Day.
Yes. I now feel kind of guilty that we're here, but...
Well, for what my opinion is worth, and to some it's not worth a lot, and to others it's worth a little bit, I really like the idea that you expressed earlier of giving other people in the industry a venue to share their thought leadership. And I get the sense that you don't feel threatened by that idea at all. You embrace the idea of bringing people that might even in some circles be perceived as competitors, but bringing them into this arena and giving them an opportunity to share their expertise.
Yeah, the internet today with as like I mentioned, with the just sheer number of search results that'll come back from certain search terms, I think we're looking at maybe entering a time where we're collaborating with your competition is going to really be what helps you rather than hurts you.
Absolutely.
Especially in insurance, like, or in a field like insurance, you've got a lot of third-party lead providers out there that, in my opinion, they're not doing a good service to anybody, not the consumer nor the agent. And I think that there's a gap that exists there. And I think that if you can get some agents to round together and maybe choose certain zip codes, okay, well, if we get a lead from this zip code, it's mine. Or, you know, just some ideas that I've thought about to go around some of these third-party sources that are not just wasting agents' time. They're badgering, they're causing the consumers to be badgered by the agents because they'll sell a lead to 25 agents in your city block. But at the same time, it's not helping an industry from an image perspective.
Has Atlanta Insurance Live given you opportunities to do some business outside of Metro Atlanta?
I think it's going to. The way insurance works, you're licensed state to state.
I see.
And, you know, currently I'm only licensed here in Georgia. However, I've made some connections in Florida through Facebook and Twitter, LinkedIn, that, you know, these people have said, you know, I wish you were licensed down here. I'd love to talk with you about your policy. So that's another goal of mine this year, is maybe to explore, well, what kind of hoops do I need to jump through to turn this into a more regional existence other than just serving this area.
Well, we've got connections in Jacksonville and Rwanda.
Exactly.
We might be able to help you out with.
My family's in insurance in Orlando, so we'll talk afterward.
All right, so we're getting close to some time here, so I want to do two more things at least. One is let's let everybody know how to get in touch with you, both how to get in touch with you on the insurance side of things, how to connect with you on the WordPress work that you do. And phone numbers, just share that with us.
You can find me all the time at AtlantaInsuranceLive.com. That's the URL for my insurance operation. And I have a personal blog at the, T-H-E, Chris Jordan. It's not an ego thing. Chris Jordan was taken.
It's branding, right?
Exactly. That's also how you can find me on Twitter. It's the Chris Jordan. And if anybody wants to call and talk with me about their coverage or you know, really anything, just shoot the breeze while I drive home today. 770-828-8072.
Okay, good. All right, well, you're not off the hot seat just yet. As you heard with Kat, we like to ask our guests to share with us the biggest mistake they've made in their career. I think I might know what your answer is, but we'll see. And more importantly, what you learned from it. So would you do that for us?
Sure. I think I'll answer this question three ways for you, actually, and give you two answers. First of all, I think that when I started doing this, I was relying a little bit too much on social media and the internet, thinking that this is the end-all be-all, and it's not. It's a tremendous tool, but you can't back off of doing the tried and true. And then, you know, for my other answer, being a business owner, entrepreneur for a fairly short amount of time now, just under a year, I haven't even been at this 1 year yet, my biggest challenge or mistake in this time is not being prepared enough. It's been over-preparation. And then in my former life working for a corporation, it was, you know, you have that safe cushion. So you kind of aren't ready for what it takes to really go out there on your own. So at that time, I was underprepared. So, you know, preparation's been a bit of a mistake, if that works. But that's on the resolution list this year, is to find that balance, and I think I'm finally there. So,
well, that's great. Chris, thank you so much for being with us today. It was a pleasure to have you. Stone, gosh, this was a fun episode, huh?
It beats the heck out of work, and we learned a lot today, too, didn't we?
We sure did. We sure did.
Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Todd Schnick, the Chris Jordan, Kat Cole, our producer Lee Cantor, and everyone here at the Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.